There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com. The Big Question.
We're about to give our verdict on Maggie O'Farrell's memoir, I Am, I Am, I Am, 17 Brushes with Death. Now, some of the questions it poses to the reader are, what would you do if your life was in danger? And how would you react? And what would you stand to lose? We're here with our reviewer, St. John Cooper, today. Welcome to the show.
Good to be here. Thank you.
This is your first time in the new studio, but you're no stranger to talking of books.
No, I love the new studio. It looks absolutely fantastic.
For anyone who hasn't heard you on the radio before, because I think it's been a while, would you mind introducing yourself?
Yeah, my name's St. John. I love reading. I've been in the region a long time. I work for Big Bus Tours, and it's great to be back.
So moving on to the book. First of all, most important question, did you enjoy it?
I really enjoyed it. We were just talking off air saying, do you enjoy books like this? I actually did enjoy it, although I think one needs to be careful how you define enjoyment, because it's certainly...
I agree.
It's certainly a book that can give some questions about your own mortality and how events... You were just talking about how events might shape or change your life. And this is absolutely a book that she's had these 17 brushes with death that have impacted her life and her journey.
What did you think of it?
Yes, I think for me, enjoy the book would be the wrong word to use. I did read it and I found it strangely captivating as I was reading it. I found a lot of it, well, no, some of it has stuck with me as being slightly unpleasant, I have to say, which actually is the mark of a good book, that I haven't gone away and forgotten about it completely. So I guess a disturbing book, and it does make you think. It made me think about, you know, my own life and how many incidents have I had that could be put into this category. Is 17 a normal amount? I feel that's slightly excessive.
Yeah, I think it was slightly excessive. I mean, she was asked in an interview, you know, are you unlucky to have had all these incidents?
Yeah.
And she was like, no, I'm actually lucky to have lived the life I have had, mm-hmm. and to have got through these incidents. And some of the incidents, though, I think were arguable.
Yes.
Whether they were really brushes with death.
Yeah.
Some were more incidents, what might have happened but didn't, you could say.
Near misses.
Near misses, you know, and we can all look at time when we were young, riding a bike, car nearly hit us, something like that.
That's
and
right.
What might have happened. Although some of them, particularly the last two chapters, which are much fuller chapters than the other incidents, really bring the book to a very dramatic and quite emotional conclusion.
Very
it certainly
emotional.
Left a tear in my eye.
Yeah,
actually.
That, those are the ones I'm thinking about really when I said that, you know, some of them absolutely stick with me. And those two are them.
One of the things that I thought was interesting about this was, because I'm often intrigued by memoirs that are structured differently to, say, a chronological This Was My Life. And she doesn't structure it in that way at all, does she? How is it set up for the reader?
How it's set up, there is no chronological order. So it's events that have taken place at various times from a child right through to an adult and the birth of her daughter. It's structured in the way that she tells the stories, almost each story is a chapter, and she titles the chapter by the part of the body that's been affected. Mm. One of the most interesting chapters, or one of the things that drew me right into the book, was the very first chapter called Neck.
Yes.
And that's a chapter where she effectively meets a killer and her instincts tell her something is wrong. And I won't spoil it, but she manages obviously not to die because she comes on to write the book.
There are 60 more incidents.
Write the book, there are 60 more to come. But this person does go on to kill someone, and it's really chilling about the decisions you make in certain moments that can effectively save your life and define your destiny.
Yes, I think it's something like that, you're right, as the opener, that was a whoa moment. And then I felt there was somewhere I was just like, wow, and then it finishes on that really, do you want to, well... I don't know, what do you want to talk about?
Yeah,
the last two.
No, we could talk about the last two.
Because they're not in chronological order, are they?
One of the last chapters is about when she's a young girl, 7 or 8 years old, and she has a virus that basically inflames her brain. Mm-hmm. And she really, really nearly dies as a child. And one of the things I found really chilling is when she was in hospital, and as a child, and I have children, some of our listeners all will do, and the child is lying there in bed, and she overhears people in the corridor, and the nurse says, shh, shh, be quiet. There's a little girl dying in that room. And, you know, this 8-year-old child heard that. And you begin to realise how that must have played on her life and actually why she wrote the book, because the following chapter, she talks about her daughter, who is probably 6 or 7 or 8 years age now, but she was born with autoimmune deficiency. And so she wanted to write this book as a way to tell her daughter, who has these incidents several times a year where she's very close to death and EpiPens and what have you, that she's not alone in facing incidents like this. And it's something that one should not necessarily be scared of. And there's a section where the daughter is going into anaphylactic shock and they have to save her life. And the idea of watching your child die in your arms and being helpless and how you deal with that and how they live their life because of it, I find very, very powerful. I find it beautifully written. And particularly now in the news, the girl who died on the aeroplane after eating a sandwich. Yeah. And the dad said, she looked into my eyes and said, Dad, I can't breathe. Help me, help me. And it really brings it home that this is something that happens in society today. And she talks about the fact that don't have nuts near my daughter. And she doesn't want people to think she's being a pain. This could kill her daughter. And I think it opens up a whole debate about society and perhaps the increase of all these allergies and the EpiPens and what is happening and why that is happening. And I think it really highlights live for today. Live every moment to the full. Don't worry what might happen tomorrow, because you never know, and you should enjoy your life and grasp it with both hands.
There was the interview, I probably read the same one in The Guardian, I think, with Maggie O'Farrell. And she was asked, because I think a lot of people picked up on the fact that not all of the stories were as powerful as each other. And 17 was an interesting number to choose, because some of them, like we said, kind of stretched the concept of a close encounter with death. And she said that, I think they pointed out the fact that if you'd explained why she was writing the book in the first place from the beginning, the fact that it was so that her daughter would understand that she understood what it was like facing this every day, this, you know, mortality, being confronted with it every single day. And she said that she's a novelist at heart, so she had to structure the memoir in the same way that she would structure a novel. So it opens with that neck chapter where she thinks that, you know, she realizes that she escaped being murdered when she was about 22, I think. And then it continues and you find out at the very end why she's writing the memoir, which made sense to me because at the time I didn't understand why she'd structured it in the way that she had.
No, I agree. There's a clear structure of kind of a beginning, a hook, and then the detail, and then finishing with a conclusion that makes you understand the whole journey. And I think that was very cleverly written, and it was beautifully written. As you say, lots of areas of this have really stayed with me, and I've talked to quite a few people about this book, and absolutely the kind of things about how it can relate to one's own life.
I think you're right about talking to people about it. I do talk a lot, I find. But I do think that when I read a book or I read something that really makes me, I have to talk about it. I have to share what I found, to try and share my pain or my emotion. And certainly, I know I kept saying to Anna, well, there's some bits of this that, in the office. You know, when she's describing, for example, something fairly gruesome, which is talking about the eczema. And that that is a permanent picture in my mind, and how awful that must be to suffer from, and that it's not just a little bit of a red blotchy rash on your skin. It can be so debilitating, and risk of infection and so on from it. So things like that stay with you. So for me, it was a book where I'd read a chapter and think, okay, right. And then I'd read the next bit and think, oh, wow. And then it's like, it was actually a roller coaster ride, but it ended right on the top of that roller coaster, I have to say.
It really did. I loved the ending. And I just thought it brought the whole book together. Mm. But I agree, that whole eczema with her daughter when she was...
See, I had to talk about it.
Young. Yeah. No, it's so unpleasant.
Yeah.
And it makes you think what people have to endure, yes, and live through and get, yeah, through, and the courage, yeah, and determination people have in this life. In many ways, that was quite inspiring, I found.
It's a testament to how good a writer she is that she makes you feel almost like your own skin is crawling.
Absolutely. And it is now.
Well, I want to return to the first, because we were talking about this almost being something that she's left for her daughter. She's written this for her daughter, so she doesn't feel quite so alone. That's what I've heard her say in interviews. And I found the ending of Neck, I think, particularly interesting, because she's always seems to be tying this in to a conversation with her daughter. So when she was 22, we already talked about the fact that, you know, she, I don't want to spoil too much, but I don't think it really is. She was nearly killed by somebody who was on her path to and from work, I think, when she was working at a hospital or something. And she told the police afterwards that she had a really bad feeling about this man who put a binocular strap around her neck. Nothing actually happened. She managed to talk her way out of it. But they thought that they said, well, what did he actually do? And she said, he put a binocular strap around my neck. And they basically laughed and said, haha, you know.
Nothing happened.
And then she finds out later that something did happen to somebody else who was walking the same path. And she's asked by her daughter years later, looking up at a hill near where they live, can we go up there? Sure, I said, glancing up at the green summit. Just you and me. I was silent for a moment. We can all go, I said, the whole family. Alert as ever to the moods of others, she immediately caught the sense that I was holding something back. Why not just you and me? Because I was thinking, because I cannot begin to say, because I cannot articulate what dangers lie around corners for you, around twisting paths, around boulders in the tangles of forests, because you are 6 years old, because there are people out there who want to hurt you and you will never know why, because I haven't yet worked out how to explain these things to you, but I will.
Dot, dot, dot. Yes. Yeah. It is very, very moving.
It is very moving. It's incredibly well written as well.
The big question.
We're talking about Maggie O'Farrell's memoir, I Am, I Am, I Am, 17 Brushes with Death. Now, some of the questions it poses to the reader are, what would you do if your life was in danger? How would you react? And what would you stand to lose? And we're here with our reviewer, St. John Cooper, today, who by day is Executive Vice President of Big Bus Tours.
Yes, something like that.
Something like that.
Sounds very grand.
It sounds much grander than it really is, believe you me.
And by night or weekend puts on his reading hat, and which is why he's here with us today for his love of books. Now, we were talking about I Am. It's very difficult to say I Am, I Am, I Am.
Yes, clearly.
The memoir by Maggie O'Farrell. Are there any kind of parting remarks and things that we haven't mentioned that you would like to share with listeners, Soph?
Just two that I can think of. Yeah. And one is when she wrote the book, to give you an idea of how personal it is. She really didn't want to share it. She took a £1 advance only. Because
£1?
One whole pound, because she had to take something to make it legally binding, but she wasn't sure she'd ever be able to tell these stories. So that gives you an idea just where that book comes from. And the other thing is the title, I Am, I Am, I Am, that comes from a Sylvia Plath book, The Bell Jar. And it basically is saying, you know, I'm alive, I'm alive, I'm here, live for now, as we talked about earlier. So that's where she draws that from. So I find it very personal, a great read. I think if you're a bit of a hypochondriac, it might make you nervous in parts.
But you'll be going straight to WebMD afterwards.
Yeah, Googling every illness and every problem. But I think it's a book that takes the reader on a real journey about life and what's important. And I think in the world we live in, work and the pressures, it's so easy to forget the important things. It also highlighted to me the importance and the responsibility of being a parent with her children and what she's doing.
Too right, yeah. And I think we can all as parents think of times when we could have been in an equally bad situation. So, yeah, I would agree with that one.
So the consensus is we would recommend this memoir.
I would fully recommend it, yeah.
Okay. Well, while we're on the subject of memoirs, I know that we've all read a few different ones as well as the one that we've just been reviewing today, I Am, I Am, I Am by Maggie O'Farrell. Still very difficult to say. What are some memoirs that you've particularly enjoyed in the past, Yvette?
Well, I've got a couple, actually, that are both book-related, and sort of interestingly, they came out at roughly the same time, I think. One is Girl with Dove by Sally Bailey. Now, in this book, she basically talks about her life and what's happened to her, but it's all in the context of other books. So the one that's referenced a lot, which is why it's right up my street, is Agatha Christie and Miss Marple.
Oh, okay. This makes sense.
Absolutely. She also references Jane Eyre a lot. But what is interesting, I mean, Miss Marple is the sort of cosiest detective ever, really. She's a little old lady in a little village.
Doesn't she knit?
And she's a lovely person who has an eagle eye for spotting wrongdoing and a very astute brain which can solve what's happened. So for me, this book had me at, well, part one, which starts, when I was 8, I wanted to be Miss Marple. I still do. Miss Marple knows everything about everyone, but nobody knows anything about her. She has no backstory. You can't see behind her and you can never get round her. Miss Marple sits in her chair in the front of St. Mary Mead and looks out upon the world. There's nothing behind that antique chair except China shepherdesses and fallen roses. So that's the context for the opening of the book. But there's actually a reader's backstory as well. So she sort of talks about her young childhood, about something that happened, and I'm not going to say what it is because I think you need to read that yourselves. If you're going to read this book, Girl with Dove, A Life Built by Books, you need to read that opening for yourself and not have me spoil it, because it puts into context all the things that happened. And she has a fairly difficult life, but she still reverts back to Miss Marple, to things that Miss Marple does, to the characters in the Miss Marple books. And I know it sounds totally weird, but honestly,
I like weird.
Yeah, I got completely caught up with it. And also, you know, Jane Eyre and other classics like that. So it's a really brilliant read about her life, awful things that happened to her, but ultimately how she found peace, harmony and success through good deeds by others, really. So it's a lovely, lovely book, Girl with a Dove.
I always find it interesting when you've got those memoirs that tie so many different strands of your life together and that incorporate characters and literature and use that to kind of show what was happening in their life at the time. And H is for Hawk did a similar thing,
yes,
by Helen MacDonald, because I think she tied in her experience of grieving for her father and training this goshawk with the author who wrote The Once and Future King, was it?
T. White. Yeah.
And the parallels between him training his own birds of prey as well. Are there any other? I think there's another one that you wanted to recommend.
Well, there
before
is
we go to
one.
St. John's recommendation.
Okay, I'll be fairly swift. So Girl with Dove by Sally Bailey, but also Lucy Mangan, Bookworm, A Memoir of Childhood Reading. Now, Lucy Mangan is younger than me. I think that's fairly obvious. So she was doing her reading in the 70s, but she was certainly not stuck in the 70s with her reading. And a lot of what she talks about relates to what I read. So we're talking about classics, if you like, but also books from the 60s that have maybe been completely forgotten. So for me, it was an absolute joy of rediscovery. And she takes us literally through her life, and she's a bookworm. That's all she wants to do. She doesn't want to do anything else except read. And she's the she's the strange child at school who doesn't have many friends because when the others are
familiar.
Playing football, yeah, she wants to sit and read, and you know, would get hit on the head by said football and things like that. But it's a great book, and for anybody who has maybe a lifetime history of reading and wants to remember things, then I think this would do it for you. I suppose it's possibly more the books that girls would have read than boys, although she certainly does Just William and things like that. But there's a lot of Millie Molly Mandy, which listeners see Annabelle is frowning at Millie Molly Mandy. If Daisy Lyne's listening, Daisy Lyne will know exactly who I'm talking about. And we both wanted the candy stripe dress that Millie Molly Mandy had. She talks about Enid Blyton a lot. And actually, she does a brilliant. Have I got time to just do two lines?
Yeah.
You sure? Okay. So this is on Enid Blyton. And she's talking about her success. When you're young, even if you like it and you're good at it, reading is hard. It's important to have somewhere you can go and know that your efforts are guaranteed to be rewarded. You need a satisfying story and an unbroken contract of delivery from your author. Mm. And you know as surely as there are Findus crispy pancakes for tea and Wonder Woman on at seven, Enid Blyton will provide. It's exactly the same instinct that will, when you're an adult, lead you to Lee Child and Returns of Law and Order, SVU instead of Trollope and the BBC documentary about Ugandan politics. Like a good thriller or police procedural, she's a great debaffler and balm to the soul. And I think for me that absolutely sums up Enid Blyton and also why as adults sometimes we need those other books. Interestingly, she goes on to say that she's reread Enid Blyton as an adult and was bitterly disappointed.
So that, I think that's a really important point. I'd like to return to that on a future show, is returning to favourites, yeah, and having them ruined,
yeah,
by,
yes,
the way you think now versus how you thought when you were a child. I would like to move on to St. John's recommendation. Before I do, we've had a couple of text messages. All Creatures Great and Small by James Herriot is a memoir that someone's recommended. Gerald Durrell, My Family and Other Animals, is Deborah's recommendation. And we also have Lucy recommending Memoirs of a Geisha, but I think that's kind of a fictional take, yes, on the memoir, yeah, format, but also A Child Called It by Dave Pelzer.
Wow. That's, oh my goodness.
That's a tough one to read.
Certainly
we were talking
is.
About the Maggie O'Farrell memoir, yeah, but A Child Called It is very tough to read.
Yeah.
And he has two other books following that called The Lost Boy and A Man Named Dave as well. Now, what would you like to recommend as an autobiography or memoir, St. John?
Well, mine's an autobiography and my wife will go crazy because she can't stand him, but it's Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run.
I have heard so many people recommend it because I think it's genuinely well written.
It's phenomenally written. It's written by him. In the style of his songs, it takes you on an absolute journey. He's got a show on Broadway at the moment that I was lucky enough to see.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
900-seater theatre.
I am so jealous.
Do you know what? I'm not the biggest Bruce Springsteen fan. My dad absolutely loves him. But the thing that makes me want to go and see him perform live is I respect his work ethic. So when he turns up and he plays for like over 4 hours.
Yeah, he does. I mean, his show on Broadway is not a concert. It's talking, it's like an evening with, and he sings,
right, okay,
just him and a guitar, and he talks sometimes without any microphone. But it's the memoir or the story of his life and what inspired the lyrics. And a lot of it is around his being brought up by his parents, his grandparents, how they lived in the same neighbourhood, his relationship that would often be very tempestuous with his father, how religion played a part on what he did and how he went on a journey. And until 1985, 1986, you all think he's been around forever. He'd had lots of albums written, Born to Run already. He was sleeping on couches, had no money at all. So it's a really powerful read. And if you can get to see the show on Broadway, it's only on for another month. Absolutely recommend it. Very difficult to get tickets.
So that's St. John's recommendation. Let's hear from Bruce himself about it.
Writing prose has its own set of rules. It connects up to your musical rules, but you know, you got to create the music without the music. You know, you got to find the music in the way that the story moves and the rhythms shift and your voice shifts. You got to create momentum purely on the page, you know. I wanted to use the classic rock and roll images, the road, the car, the girl. What else is there? It was a language enshrined by Chuck Berry, the Beach Boys, Hank Williams, and every lost highwayman going back to the invention of the wheel. When you're writing musically, you know, you have that guitar, you have the rhythm that condenses time, and you can say an awful lot with just a brief line or two lines or three lines. Part of the freedom of the book, it allows you to delve into great detail, but once again, it still has to be musical, and it still has to flow and move in a way that keeps the reader interested. But to make these images matter, I'd have to shape them into something fresh, something that transcended nostalgia, sentiment, and familiarity. I was a child of Vietnam-era America, of the Kennedy, King, and Malcolm X assassinations. The country no longer felt like the innocent place it was said to be in the Eisenhower 50s. Political murder, economic injustice, and institutionalized racism were all powerfully and brutally present. These were issues that had previously been relegated to the margins of American life. Dread, the sense that things might not work out, that the moral high ground had been swept out from underneath us, that the dream we had of ourselves had somehow been tainted and the future would forever be uninsured, was in the air.
Bruce Springsteen there talking about his memoir, Born to Run, autobiography, recommended by St. John Cooper, who's our reviewer in the studio today, where we were talking about memoirs I Am, I Am, I Am by Maggie O'Farrell, and Bookworm by Lucy Mangan, and Girl with Dove by Sally Bailey. Did I get that right?
That's correct.
Those are Yvette's recommendations.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.